Good morning, y'all. It's good to see everybody in church this morning. Good to see some new faces back with us. I just wanted to remind you, you're not visitors anymore. You're only visitors for one Sunday. Second Sunday, you're just part of us. So that's how it is. So we don't have any visitors today, I don't think. But we have. It's good to see all of y'all on this special day. Now, you might not have known it was a special day, but today is not just one of those days when somebody asks you, what day is it? And you say, it's Sunday or it's Tuesday or whatever. But today is a special day. And it's a special day for not just one reason. It's a special day for a lot of different reasons. It's a lot of different special days. And what special day you think it is may depend a lot on who you are and the kind of things you're interested in, whether you think of it as one special day in particular or another. First of all, today is a global palindrome day. That's the day on which you write the date 02/02/2020, and you can write it the same way forwards and backwards, 02/02/2020. And what's special about today is it's a global palindrome day. Now, as you know, people in the U.S. and people in the U.K. write their dates differently when they do it that way. You know, in the U.S. we put the month first, and here you put the date first. Well, since the month and the date are the same, it's the same all over the world. So it's a global palindrome day, and that hasn't happened for 909 years. And a lot of people think that's pretty neat, I guess it is. But today is not just the world's worldwide palindrome day for the first time in 909 years. It's also Super Bowl Sunday. Now, I would probably never have known that it was Super Bowl Sunday this Sunday unless my friends on social media let me know. And let me tell you, they let you know for about the past 2 weeks. They let you know that Super Bowl's coming. I hardly know what teams are playing, but today is Super Bowl Sunday, that great celebration of, well, American football and TV commercials. It's happening today. That's about as much as I know about that. But in addition to being Worldwide Palindrome Day and Super Bowl Sunday, the liturgical calendar lets us know that today is Candlemas Sunday, celebration of the presentation of Jesus at the temple. And so tonight at 6:30... there'll be a Candlemas service at St. Columba's Episcopal Church. That's the one on down the prom, the Episcopal one, not the big red one. But we're going to be going there, and Tasha is going to be doing a reading. So we'd love it if you could come and join us. You know, Candlemas lets us know that Christmas was 40 days ago. Can you believe that? It's hard to believe. Now, in addition to being a worldwide palindrome day and Super Bowl Sunday and Candlemas Sunday, today is also Groundhog Day. Now, Groundhog Day is not, as my dad likes to joke, it is not a celebration of pork sausage. Groundhog. It is a day when Americans in the northern part of the U.S. anxiously wait to find out whether Punxsutawney Phil, that's that groundhog there, he's up in Pennsylvania. They wait to see if he is going to come out of his burrow and see his shadow. And Americans down south, down in Atlanta, we look to General Beauregard Lee. He is a southern groundhog who lives near Atlanta in that stately antebellum mansion. I'm not kidding, that's actually Beauregard Lee's house. But the reason that we want to know if these groundhogs see their shadow when they come out of their burrow is because if they do, they run back into their house, run back into their burrow, and it means 6 more weeks of winter. And if they don't see their shadows, then an early spring is on the way. I have no idea how reliable these fur-covered weathermen are, but people like to watch them anyway. Now, in addition to being a worldwide palindrome day and Super Bowl Sunday and Candlemas Sunday and Groundhog Day, today is also the start of a new sermon series. A few weeks ago, we shared the church's vision statement, with you in a sermon called Hospitality, Health, and Holiness. And for the next few weeks, from today until March 1st, that's the first Sunday in Lent, we'll skip February 16th because that's when we're having our AGM and also our that'll be our Big Faith Sunday. So you'll want to come and see how we combine those two because it's going to be interesting. But anyway, from today until March 1st, we'll be looking at each one of those components, hospitality, health, and holiness, individually. Today we'll do hospitality, then we'll do two Sundays on health, and then we'll wind up on March 1st with holiness. And we'll begin each sermon by reading the vision statement. Maybe by March 1st, we might have it memorized. Because the church's vision statement isn't just something we put on the website or something that we put into the AGM report. It should be something that inspires and directs every one of us, directing everything that the church does over the next year and possibly beyond. And when I say church, I'm not just talking about the corporate church. I'm not talking about the church as a whole. I'm talking about all of us together as a church. I'm talking about us individually as ministers and in small groups and as team members. So it's my hope that our vision statement will inspire us and inform our individual everyday life in the real world, as well as the work of the church as a whole. So let's read our vision statement. In 2020, Large Church of the Nazarene will fulfill our mission to make Christ-like disciples, to incorporate believers into fellowship and membership, and to equip for ministry all who respond in faith by focusing on hospitality, health, and holiness. Hospitality entails providing a welcoming, safe space and fellowship at the Lord's table, while health includes promoting good stewardship of ourselves and our environment. And holiness is perfect love and heart cleansing that transforms the way we think and act. Following the example of the early church in Acts 2, we believe that God will bless our efforts and empower us with the Holy Spirit to bring wholeness and healing to our community. So we talk about hospitality in our vision statement. And we define it a little because the word hospitality is a word that's used in general conversation. A person who is known for their hospitality might just be a person who throws really nice dinner parties or who is a good host when visitors stay at their house. Maybe they feed them well. Maybe they have a nice place for them to stay. Maybe they like to show them around. They're a good tour guide. Hospitality is also an industry in our culture. The hospitality industry, it includes hotels and lodging and restaurants and bars and catering and cruise lines and even theme parks. The hospitality industry is built on the principle of exchange. Hosts of one kind or another, they take care of their customers in exchange for money. And in exchange for repeat business. And in turn, customers have a nice meal or a fun holiday or a restful stay. And they're glad to give their host a return on their investment. And the system depends on this back and forth exchange. So when we think about hospitality in an economic sense, in a cultural sense, those are the kinds of things we might think about. But when we think about Christian hospitality, we're talking about something different. And just briefly today, I'd like to talk about what Christian hospitality is, and then about how we do it. So first, let's talk about what Christian hospitality is. In our vision statement, we say that we are following the example of the early church in Acts 2. And we read in Acts 2, starting with verse 44, all who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, as they spent much time together in their temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And day by day, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved. Now, where do we find Christian hospitality in these verses? Well, it's obvious that breaking bread together with other Christians in each other's homes is Christian hospitality. And so is eating with glad and generous hearts. And that's good because, in my experience, Nazarenes are very good at breaking bread in each other's homes and eating with glad and generous hearts. Maybe we're a little too good at it. And spending time together in the temple is Christian hospitality, but perhaps the most important aspect of Christian hospitality that we find in these verses is the fact that the members of the early church were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. This is radical hospitality. This is not the hospitality of the industry, of the economic exchange system. This is a hospitality that says, my resources are not my own. They are gifts from God, and I am a steward of them. And when there's a need, my resources are ready to meet that need. This is what it means to follow that second part of the greatest commandment, to love one's neighbor as oneself. This is Christian hospitality, and it is risky, because it's an act of faith that says, God will provide for my need as I provide for the needs of others. But there's one more example here of Christian hospitality. It's in that last verse. And day by day, the Lord added to their numbers those who were being saved. What does this tell us? It tells us that these believers were interacting with folks who were not saved yet. And it tells us that they were welcoming enough to add to their number folks who had just become Christians, baby Christians, who'd been unsaved, who'd been sinners, perhaps even pagans the day before, who were added to their number for no other reason than their confession of faith in the Lord Jesus. That's Christian hospitality. Now, I have hinted around at two different aspects of what Christian hospitality is so far, but I want to make them clear and explicit. And to do so, I want to back up for a minute. And I want to talk about the fact that today is Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is not just a day. It's also a movie. It is a movie starring Bill Murray, and it is one of my favorite movies. It's a movie I've watched many times, and a movie that I've taught in a lot of classes in churches, in small groups, and in college classes. Now, Groundhog Day, the movie, takes place on February 2nd, and it's about a weatherman who has been sent to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Remember where that groundhog was we talked about earlier? He's gone there with his news team to cover the Groundhog Day celebrations. That's him there. Now this weatherman, Phil Connors, is, to be blunt, a jerk. He is egotistical, self-centered, he has no friends, and he doesn't want them. He hates everything and everybody. Now, I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but what happens to Phil Connors is that he goes to bed on the night of February 2nd, And when he wakes up the next morning, it's February 2nd again. And when he wakes up the next day, it's February 2nd again. And on and on and on, the next day and the next day and the next day for years. And some people I know have watched this movie and they have said that it is a movie about a man who lives the same day over and over again. But that's not exactly true, because everybody lives the same day over and over again. The difference is that Phil knows it. For some reason, he has been given the gift of the knowledge that he's living the same day over and over again. And this privilege, this gift that has been given to him, is totally unmerited. He certainly doesn't deserve it. It's a lot like grace. And what happens to Phil over the years is that he realizes what an awful person he's been, what a terrible friend, and he begins to spend his days meeting the needs of others, even total strangers. He is transformed. Now, Phil's name is ironic. Because in the Greek, philos means beloved or friend, and philia means friendship or love, the love between friends. And a longer word for brotherly love is a word called Philadelphia. It's not just a city in Pennsylvania. Philadelphia is the love among brothers and sisters, those who feel like family. And that's also one of the things that Phil Connors comes to understand the importance of. Philadelphia, brotherly love. So Phil, the weatherman, grows to fit his name, Phil. But there's another Phil in Groundhog Day. Punxsutawney Phil, the groundhog. And there's another Phil word that Phil Connors learns about in addition to Philadelphia, and that's philoxenia, the love of strangers, because Phil learns to meet the needs not just of those close to him, but of complete strangers too, even knowing he will get nothing in return. So there are two Phils in Groundhog Day. And there are two Phils that Phil Connors learns about. And those two aspects of Christian hospitality that I mentioned, that I wanted to make explicit, Philadelphia and philoxenia, brotherly love and the love of strangers. Write those down. Let's take a look at two related passages in two different epistles, two letters to followers of Jesus containing instructions on how they're to live. I want to look at Paul's epistle to the Romans and the epistle to the Hebrews. These are in your sermon notes. But listen to these two passages and see if you can spot the similarities. First, the Romans passage, beginning with verse 10 of chapter 12. Paul writes, "Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor." And let's skip to verse 13. "Contribute to the needs of the saints. Extend hospitality to strangers." Now let's look at the Hebrews passage. In Hebrews 13 we read, "Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. For by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison, as though you were in prison with them. Those who are being tortured, as though you yourselves were being tortured." Now let's compare the two. Let's begin with verse 10 from Romans and verse 1 from Hebrews. "Love one another with mutual affection, and let mutual love continue." Now, the noun in both of those statements, the love that Christians are to share with each other, to love each other with, guess what it is? Philadelphia. Paul is saying, have Philadelphia. Be like family. And check out the challenge that Paul gives us next. Outdo one another in showing honor. Outdo one another in showing honor. Consider your brothers and sisters above yourself, giving them so much honor and exalting them so that we're all trying to outdo each other in showing honor to the other person. And if we all do that, everyone's needs are met. And Paul goes further. Contribute to the needs of the saints. This is what we heard in Acts 2. Don't consider your resources simply your own, but consider them as available to do the work of the kingdom, to meet the needs of your brothers and sisters. That's what Philadelphia means. Now let's look at what Paul says in verse 13. Extend hospitality to strangers. The Greek word there for hospitality, philoxenia, the love of strangers. It's a love that treats the alien, the other, the foreigner, the stranger, even the enemy, as a friend. That kind of hospitality enacts loving another as yourself. And the writer of Hebrews makes that abundantly clear. He writes, remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them, and those who are being tortured as though you yourselves were being tortured. The Greek there means, remember those who are being tortured as if you had the same body that they do. That is loving the other as yourself. This is radical hospitality. That is Christian hospitality. Philoxenia and Philadelphia. And so these passages tell us that Christian hospitality is shown by loving only two types of people. It's very simple. Christian hospitality only entails loving two types of people. Just two. Two kinds of people we're called to love. Those who are our brothers and sisters, and those who are not. Or to put it another way, those who are strangers and those who are not. And that's everybody, isn't it? Do you know when we are friends, philos, to strangers, xenos, to the aliens, to the unwelcome, to the looked down upon, we are imitators of Christ. Remember what Jesus is accused of in Matthew 11 and Luke 7. It's there in your sermon notes. Being a friend, philos, of sinners and tax collectors, the folks we might tend to think we ought to stay away from. Jesus gets a bad reputation because he hangs out with those people. He came eating and drinking, and they say, behold, a drunkard and a friend of sinners. He hangs out with the people. We think, well, I don't know. You're going to ruin your reputation there, Jesus. But remember also who Jesus is in Matthew 25. When the question is asked, when was it that we saw you, a stranger, xenos, and welcomed you? And he replies, truly I tell you, just as you did it to the least of these, you did it unto me. But how do we show Christian hospitality practically? How do we do that? Well, individually, we do that when we try to outdo our brothers and sisters in showing each other honor. When we humble ourselves and exalt others. When we truly love others as ourselves. When we befriend those whose friendship might damage our reputations. When we invite those who have nothing to offer us. when we invite them to church, to coffee, to a meal, when we sit and chat with them on a park bench, knowing that they have nothing at all to offer us. That we are simply following the example of Jesus, who was a friend to sinners and a stranger in need. There are a million ways that we as individuals can show Christian hospitality, and opportunities arise every single day. In the church as a whole, we need look no further than our Sunday services and our Bible study when we welcome anyone and everyone to our prayer request box and our prayer times, where we say, "I'll pray for your need as if it were my own." To Light Bite, to our Christmas dinner, to our New Year's dinner, when we say, "Whoever you are, come have a seat at the table. What are your needs? Are you hungry? Are you lonely? Do you just need some friendship, a smile, a laugh? Do you have a spiritual need? We'll pray with you. What do we get in return?" You know, we don't have to get anything in return from those who we serve. But what if we lose money? Well, we're not in the hospitality industry. We are following Jesus, who said in Luke 14, it's there in your notes, "When you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you." God will provide, and His resources are abundant. This year, we'll be continuing to open our table to anyone and everyone. We'll be exploring new ways to offer Christian hospitality to our community, not just our local community, but our global community, through missions, through our online presence. We'll be careful to look for new ways, for new needs that we see, so that we can meet them, so that we can bring the community into Jesus' presence. We will show Philadelphia and Philoxenia, the two Phils, the love of our brothers and sisters and of the strangers. And in so doing, we'll enact that agape love, that love that pours itself out without expectation of return, that risky, radical hospitality that puts its faith in God alone to give the increase, to give the blessing. And He always does, and He always will, beyond all we can ask or imagine. Today's another special day besides Super Bowl Sunday and Candlemas and Groundhog Day. It's Communion Sunday. And perhaps no other activity exhibits Christian hospitality as well or as completely as the invitation to partake of the Eucharist, to have a seat at the Lord's table.